The last thing that I do before I go to a dentist appointment is brush my teeth. Even if I'm scheduled to have my teeth clean that day, I still am going to brush my teeth beforehand because I want my mouth to be clean for the hygienist. It just seems polite, doesn't it? Because I doubt that they would be very happy if I walked in, you know, chewing on peanut butter crackers and reeking of garlic. It wouldn't really make their day. In the same way, I imagine that when a church engages in the ritual of foot washing, which many churches do, I imagine that on that day when people show up, that every foot in that church has been freshly scrubbed. Because the worst thing you would want to do is show up at a foot washing with dirty feet. I mean, if it is for me getting ready, I would use an extra soapy washcloth to scour my toes, my feet, and then floss between each toe. Check that my nails were clean and short. I'm sure the ladies are out there maybe putting on an extra coat of polish. You want to look good for the foot washing. After all, it would be impolite to arrive at a foot washing with grubby feet. But this would not have been the case in Jesus' day. First of all, foot washing was not a religious ritual. You didn't go to church to have your feet washed. Rather, it was a simple sign of hospitality. If you invited someone into your home, you would offer to have a servant wash their feet. That was the servant's job. And rarely would anybody show up with clean footsies because, well, in that day, most people wore sandals. And to get anywhere, they had to walk, and roads weren't generally paved, they were just dirt. And if the weather was dry, the roads would be dusty, and if they weren't dry, they'd be muddy. And if a flock of sheep or goats had been driven down that road, there would be piles of manure to deal with. And even worse, since there was no public sanitation infrastructure, the streets and the roads of the towns and villages served as open sewers. It would be impossible to arrive anywhere with clean feet. So when invited into someone's house, it was a sign of hospitality to have one's feet washed. Our reading for today is set at that final meal that Jesus shared with his disciples. Shortly after that meal, Jesus would be betrayed and arrested. But our reading begins with the assurance that Jesus is well aware of what is going to happen to him. He knows that his time is coming to a close, and yet he is still in control. During the meal with his disciples, Jesus gets up from the table, and he removes his outer robe, and he ties a towel around himself. And then taking a basin and pouring water into it, he goes around the room, washing the feet of his disciples. Remember, they're not in someone's home. They've rented this room for the evening. The only host to show them hospitality is Jesus himself. When Jesus gets to Simon Peter, Peter asks, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" And Jesus informs Peter that Peter does not know what Jesus is doing. But in time, he will begin to understand. Peter argues with Jesus, saying, "You will never wash my feet." And it's not difficult to see why Peter would object to having Jesus wash his feet. That is the task of a servant. And to be honest, it was usually a young female servant, a girl, who was given the job of washing the feet of the guest in the house. So it's inconceivable to Peter that his teacher and his master should humiliate himself to this base task of scraping crusted, muddy grime from his feet. Jesus tells Peter then unless he actually allows him to do this, to wash his feet, then Peter will have no investment with him. This act will build a connection between them, a needed and necessary connection. Peter pushes back again and says, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." By saying this, Peter is trying to reshape this situation. If Peter can get Jesus to wash his hands or his head, then the act becomes a religious event. You know, the Jews practice the ritual washing of hands before eating. Washing the head represents baptism. If Jesus does either of these things, then, well, at least in Peter's eyes, Jesus will be elevated from servant to priest, and Peter's worldview will be preserved. But Jesus stands firm. He washes Peter's feet, and feet only, and he performs the task as a servant. And when he's finished, he puts his robe back on, and he returns to his place at the table. And he then addresses those who are there with him in the room and establishes himself as a model for them to follow. He says, "If I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have set you an example that you also should do as I have done to you." Indeed, Jesus did set an example for all who would follow him. And if he had stopped there, we today would likely engage in a ritual foot washing because Jesus instructed us to do so. But we read on and we see that foot washing was not really the point. It was the means to a much greater lesson. Jesus goes on to say, "Very truly I tell you, servants are not greater than their master." And yes, that is correct. Servants are not greater than their master. We all understand that there is a hierarchy. The student is not greater than the teacher. The subject is not greater than the king. When Jesus, the master, does take on the role of a servant, what happens? I mean, is he just pretending? Is he role-playing? No. He is teaching the disciples that when they wash the feet of one another, they must become the servant, both in action as well as in attitude. They must be a servant in their heart. They must become truly humble in this chore. They are to look up, not down, at the person that they are serving. And this is a difficult task that Jesus has assigned to his followers. Not only are we called to serve others, but we are to do so as servants ourselves. How often, when we help someone, do we judge them? Do we put them down because we are helping them? Whether we are providing assistance to someone who is homeless, helping someone with their rent, loaning money to a relative to buy a car, or just raking an elderly neighbor's leaves. When we do these things, it is difficult not to reflect on how we are better because we are helping someone who is less than us, who is weaker than us. We may be serving them, but because we see ourselves as better than, we're not truly servants, and we are not truly loving them as Jesus calls us to do. You may think that what Jesus is asking is impossible. How can we ever serve as servants like that? So now I would like to take a moment and tell you about someone who did, in fact, do this. This man's name is Henry Nouwen. You may have heard of him. He is one of the greatest theologians of our day. He was a priest, a teacher, a chaplain, an author, and so much more. He taught at such illustrious schools as Notre Dame, Yale, Harvard, and others. He was a prolific author. My favorite Nouwen book is one called The Wounded Healer. I never met Father Nouwen, but I know people who knew him, and they all spoke about his kind and loving nature. Henry Nouwen was born in the Netherlands in 1932. His family was Catholic, and from an early age, he felt the call to priesthood. He was ordained at age 25. After ordination, he continued his education studying psychology. But he also worked as a pastor for a short time in the mines. He was a chaplain in the army. He was even chaplain of the Holland America line, accompanying immigrants to the United States. In time, he entered academia as a teacher, and after Notre Dame, he taught at Yale for 10 years. And while there, he became interested in the plight of the poor in South America and moved to Peru, intending to stay there for the rest of his life. 2 years later, however, he returned to the U.S. to teach at Harvard. By happenstance during his travels, Nouwen met the founder of LARCH. LARCH, it's a French word, LARCHE, so that means it's hard to pronounce. And this is an international movement of communities that welcome people with disabilities. And Nouwen was so moved by the purpose and function of this community that he resigned from Harvard and moved to France, where the original community of LARCH was located. He then became a pastor of the LARCH community in Toronto, Canada, where he lived for the last 10 years of his life. He died in 1996. Nouwen believed that coming to that place in Toronto was like coming to his true home. He lived in a house with people with disabilities, and eventually he was asked to help one of them, Adam Arnett, a severely disabled man, and he was asked to help him with his morning routine. Adam was the weakest and most disabled person in this community, and although he was in his 20s, he couldn't speak. He couldn't dress himself. He couldn't walk or eat without help. And shortly before he died, Nouwen wrote a small but powerful book called Adam, God's Beloved. And in this book, Nouwen describes how Adam became his friend, his teacher, and his guide. In describing his days with Adam, Nouwen writes, "It takes me about an hour and a half to wake Adam up, give him his medication, carry him to his bath, wash him, shave him, clean his teeth, dress him, walk him to the kitchen, give him his breakfast, put him in his wheelchair, and bring him to the place where he spends most of the day with therapeutic exercises. He does not cry or laugh. Only occasionally does he make eye contact. His back is distorted. His arm and leg movements are twisted. He suffers from severe epilepsy and, despite heavy medication, sees few days without grand mal seizures. Sometimes he grows suddenly rigid, and he utters a howling moan. On a few occasions, I've seen one big tear roll down his cheek." Nouwen goes on to say, "As I worked with Adam, I began to see myself right in the center of this community. All of my life had been shaped by words, ideas, books, and encyclopedias. But now, my priorities were shifting. What was becoming important for me was Adam and our privileged time together. When he offered me his body in total vulnerability, when he gave me himself. Adam was sent to bring good news to the world. It was his mission, as it was the mission of Jesus. Adam was very simply, quietly, and uniquely there. He was a person who, by his very life, announced the marvelous mystery of our God. I am precious, beloved, whole, and born of God. Adam bore silent witness to this mystery, which has nothing to do with whether or not he could speak, walk, or express himself, whether or not he made money, had a job, was fashionable, famous, married, or single. It had to do with his being. He was and is a beloved child of God. It is the same news that Jesus came to announce, and it is the news that all those who are poor keep proclaiming in and through their very weakness. Life is a gift. Each one of us is unique, known by name, and loved by the one who fashioned us. Father Nouwen also tells this story in his book. He says, I still remember a woman coming to visit the new house, walking right up to Adam and saying, poor man, why did this happen to you? Let me pray over you so that our dear Lord may heal you. And she motioned the assistant to make a circle around Adam to pray, but one of them gently tapped her on the shoulder and said, Adam doesn't need any healing. He's fine. He is just happy that you came for dinner. Please join us at the table. Through his caring and relationship with Adam, a man who could not speak, who could not care for himself, who could not do anything, Henry Nouwen learned to wash feet as Jesus instructed. It wasn't easy. It wasn't quick. It took time for him to fall into the rhythm of Adam's life. But as he writes, he learned to treasure Adam for what Adam could give him, not for what he could give Adam. And that is what Jesus calls his followers to do, to set aside our pride and insecurities, our arrogance and self-interest, in order to love others as God loves them, to see people as God sees them, to see everyone as worthy. And to do this, we must learn to serve. Amen.